Orioles have won the game.
They did it! They did it! They did it!
And they're going crazy. They're jumping on each other.
One of the most unbelievable finishes you will ever see.
Well, welcome to it. Another edition of Magic Moments, Brett Hollander and Jeff Arnold. And we're going to soon talk to former Oriole Steve Pearce about the 2014 AL East clinching game for the Orioles against the Toronto Blue Jays. And Jeff, first of all, let's talk about Pearce. What an interesting guy and what an interesting career. You want to talk about someone who bounced around, but yet had so many big baseball moments, including many with this 2014 Orioles team.
I mean, you don't hear about too many players that accrue 10 years of big league service time when for the first, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years of his career, he didn't even play 100 games. I mean, it's hard to stick around for as long as he did. He started with the Pirates. I mean, he was up and down, and it took him a while to build up some momentum, and it was – you know, that 2014 season, which was kind of the year for him where he set career highs in a bunch of different categories. He played all across the field and kept him around. And it was good that he was around because the Orioles that year, they had a lot of guys that they were really relying upon that, you know, Machado was dealing with an injury. Chris Davis had the situation that he was dealing with. There were all kinds of different things that came up, and so the Orioles relied on a bunch of their role players. Pearce was one of them, and he produced in a huge way that was pivotal to that 2014 team.
Yeah, that O's run, they had a lot of perennial all-stars, obviously a lot of good players, but to me, guys like Steve Pearce were kind of the symbol of the glue and finding a new hero every night, and that's really the role they were in. I mean, 2014, it almost got bizarre at the time. They pick up guys like Alejandro Deaza or Kelly Johnson down the stretch, and all of a sudden those guys were hitting the walk-offs, and it almost like didn't make any sense, but every button they pushed was the right button. But Pearce had a big year that year, 21 home runs, homer on the clinching night, a homer twice the next day, but he was someone who, as you said, Jeff, played around. The Orioles, you know, you saw flashes of it a few years prior. He, you know, maybe he was playing against left-handed pitching, maybe he'd come up as a pinch hitter. But still someone, if you look at his transaction chart, Jeff, something I know you've had to deal with a lot in your career when it comes to monitoring players. I mean, it's on and off rosters almost by the day for a guy like Steve Pearce until he found kind of a home with the Baltimore Orioles. And he got an opportunity, and boy, did he take advantage of it.
And that was probably the reason why he put up the numbers that he did. It's very hard to put consistent production together when you are serving as a pinch hitter, you're playing every third day, or the time that you get on the field isn't consistent. I mean, to produce in those spots where it's like in and out, like it's very hard to do that. So the fact that he was getting an opportunity to consistently be in the lineup and that Buck Showalter had a lot of faith in him, you know, kind of like Robert Andino, who we talked to on the first episode of this podcast, where he kept inserting him in the lineup and Pearce just kept on producing. And if you don't have, like I said, guys like him and the Ryan Flahertys and the Kelly Johnsons and Caleb Josephs and, you know, all those different players that had a role in that team, it may not have allowed some of those other great exploits like Nelson Cruz to fully come through and allow you to get to the ALCS.
I want to take fans back to this day. It was September the 16th, 2014, in Baltimore, Maryland, over 35,000 fans on hand on a Tuesday night saw the Orioles beat the Blue Jays 8-2. Now, the starting matchup in that game was Drew Hutchinson of the Toronto Blue Jays against Ubaldo Jimenez of the Orioles. Now, Ubaldo had signed as a free agent really as spring training was getting going in 2014. And his first year, as was his career at Baltimore, for being honest, was a struggle. But he did win that night. He pitched pretty well, 5 innings, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts. And then that Orioles lockdown bullpen behind him. On this night, it was McFarland, O'Day, Andrew Miller, who was a deadline pickup and was sensational. And then Tommy Hunter closed it out. And it was a party a lot of Orioles fans have been waiting for, really, since 1997. I mean, 2012 was so special. And that was kind of the building process to this. But what a night in downtown Baltimore.
Incredible night in downtown Baltimore. And then they would have another one, you know, not too far down the road with the Delmon Young game. And him producing in that spot that sends you to Detroit, as Steve pointed out in our conversation. The staff that was lights out for the Tigers then is still a trio that if you looked at it now, they would still be a pretty harrowing group that you had to face. And yet the Orioles were able to sweep them in three games. And then you move on to Kansas City, two teams with great bullpens. And although the Orioles had so many hard hit balls in that series, Pierce in particular, it just felt like that whenever you'd make great contact, it was at somebody or the likes of Mike Moustakas was making some kind of a great play at third base. And then you would turn it into a game where fifth inning, sixth inning, the Royals bring in all their different group of relievers. And it just didn't seem like it. And it just wasn't meant to be, but that was a special year for the Orioles that Orioles fans had waited so long for. They had all the pieces. And I find, Brett, that the things about teams that win World Series is you expect the good players to be good, but it's the role players who step up and do extraordinary things that define those World Series winning teams. And for that reason, it was my first one with the organization in 2014 when you saw the way that guys like Steve Pierce played. That had you believing this might be the year that Birdland gets another World Series.
That was definitely the sentiment all season long. And now let's chop it up. Let's look back at this magic moment with Steve Pierce.
Well, right now, he's a guy that you want up there in this situation. Two aboard, two outs. And now the 0-1 pitch. Pierce, fly ball, right center. Pretty well hit on the run. Anthony goes way back there. Wave that baby. Bye-bye. Pierce has done it. A three-run homer. Orioles ahead, 3-1.
Well, it was a night to remember at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. It was a Tuesday, September 16th, 2014, and a rowdy crowd saw the Baltimore Orioles win the American League East, part of an 8-2 win over the Toronto Blue Jays. A big part of that team was Steve Pierce, who played around with the Orioles for several seasons, but had a monster year in 2014 as the Orioles went on to win 96 games, swept the divisional round opponent of the Detroit Tigers, and eventually lost in the American League Championship Series. But Steve Pierce joins us right now to reminisce about all of that. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you and your family are well.
Thank you for having me, man. Thank you for having me. Look forward to talking about this.
Well, Steve, take us through kind of the buildup, because in the end, you know, the American League East is the toughest division in pro sports, but the Orioles kind of lapped the field. You know what I mean? There was nothing in doubt going into September 16th. It was just a matter of when.
Oh, yeah, it sure was, man. We had such a good team, and people forgot about, like, all the injuries that we had also. You know, we had such a great chemistry in the clubhouse, and we had this next man up mentality. And you know, we lost Weeders, we lost Davis, we lost Machado. You know, those were key parts of the team, and you know, it's just whoever stepped up, like Caleb Verdi or whoever stepped up, they always seemed to do the job, and we always it was next man up. Somebody knew every single night, and it was just a fun season.
You were certainly one of the guys that benefited from that next man up, getting a lot of opportunities to play every day. And you had the first blow of that game with the three-run homer. What do you remember when you walked into the batter's box for that first AB against Hutchinson?
You know, we had such a big lead, so it wasn't like we were you know, kind of pressing going into that night. It was one game to clinch, and like September 18th, I think you guys said, so it was a magical night, but it wasn't like one of those, you know, win or go home moments. So it's like, it was at that time, I think we knew it was a matter of time that we were going to win the division. So, but you know, we were hot. We were hot as a pistol at that time. And it was only a matter of time that we knew we were going to take it down.
Steve, tell me about the crowd that night at the ballpark and the buildup, and obviously a lot of Seven Nation Army throughout the course of that season, and kind of just the not only the volume of crowd, but the energy of the crowd. You've obviously played in some big moments and big spots in some big venues, but tell us about that.
Oh man, it was a magical night. It was fun, and the crowd was rocking. And that was one thing about, you know, that year is is we're in such a tough division, and when we were taking down, this crowd just kept getting bigger and bigger, and you know, when you talk about home field advantage, we felt that every single night, and that was huge for us at that time.
Was there a moment where you kind of knew it was over? I mean, Diaza had that big hit later on in the game, but was there a moment where maybe you knew that it was kind of fully in the bag and over?
I don't know. You know, it was just one of those years and one of those teams that we had that it didn't really matter what the situation. We always knew we were gonna find a way to win. If we were winning, we knew we were gonna win. If we were losing, it was a matter of time for us to come back and win. We just had one of those teams. We just always managed to find ways to get it done, and it was just one of the funnest teams I've ever been a part of.
You mentioned the guys that were out for a huge part of that season. I think Weeders went down on May 5th, and he was actually off to a monster start, the best start of his career. Machado comes back late and then gets hurt late, and then Davis had the suspension. I mean, you talk about three guys who have had these astronomical contracts in baseball, three guys who were stars at different points of their career, to lose those guys. I mean, you still have a core group of really known guys who've been in all-star games and stuff like that, the Joneses, the Hardys, but it was really Cruz comes on this one-year deal in spring training of 14, and then you have this monster season, and it was really, I thought, guys like you over the course of that run, particularly from 2012 through 16, who kind of were glue guys in the Buck Showalter world.
Yeah. I mean, we had such a great team on the field, and what was best was our off the field. You know, we always had fun in the clubhouse, and we always pulled for each other. And then the new guys who stepped up, like you said, Weeders went down. Boom! Here comes Caleb Joseph. And he was a machine back there. I mean, he killed rally after rally for other teams. And, he's always just making, just big, big defensive plays, throwing somebody out. Even Scope. Scope was a rookie that year, I believe. And, he was playing, awesome defense with him and JJ up the middle. And it was just always – we took so much pressure off of the core group, the big superstars. Because we had somebody new step in, and they fulfilled the role just perfectly.
When you recorded that final out of the game, I'm curious, what happened with the ball? Because you were the guy that you had the ball, and then you're running over everybody's dogpiling and everything like that. What happened to the ball, the final out? Do you have it with you, or where did it end up going?
Oh, I got it. I have it. Uh-huh. Me and Hunter. Because Tommy, I remember was pitching, and I gave it to him, and he gave it back to me, and I said, "How about we switch off for every couple of years, we keep giving it back to each other." Well, it kind of fell apart, and I kind of just still have it. So that was definitely it was a cool night, and it's something that me and Tommy we always talk about.
Steve, you were 31 years old in 2014. You played a lot of games, both in the big leagues and minor leagues. But it was, not a point where you were an established player until that year. But could you appreciate the moment for Nick Markakis and Adam Jones, guys who have been with the club for so long through a lot of tough times? And it's hard for me to ever forget the look on those two guys after winning a division championship.
Markakis, man, he was a great player. Those guys built the Orioles. Those were the core guys. They were there in the rough times, and when we all came together in 14, it was awesome that they were still there to see it through, and man, those guys were such great teammates. They were awesome. They were awesome clubhouse guys, and wished them nothing but the best. When they left, Markakis he left first, man, I really enjoyed playing him. He was a great guy and a great teammate.
How about Nelson Cruz? I mean, he comes over to the Orioles, most valuable Oriole that year. Definitely some, maybe some people, with some question marks given what, could kind of happen before he came to the team. But the production that he put up and just watching him every day, what was that like for you?
Oh, it was awesome. it was awesome watching him, and he was another great guy. You know, he was a late sign in spring training. We really didn't know what kind of guy we were getting. We knew we could play ball, but you know, personality wise, and you know, we loved him the first day he came. The energy that he brought, you know, obviously, you know, he brought the bat too, but you know, the energy in the clubhouse. And in his personality, man, he was so funny. He gets everybody laughing, and it's no wonder that almost every single team that he's on always finds a way to make it to the playoffs, because you know he's just a great dude, great clubhouse guy. He makes it baseball fun for everybody.
Steve, you went deep in the clinching game, but I don't know how many people remember this. You went deep twice the day after against the Blue Jays. I don't know how late you guys were up or how early you guys were up the next day, but that's pretty impressive to go deep twice the day after a clincher. And by the way, that was also an Orioles win.
Yeah, that, you know, we went out and we celebrated after clinching, and going out there the next day, it was a little blurry, but yeah, man, somehow I ran into a couple baseballs and found a way to get it done. But I know that was a tough night. Not just me, but for everybody.
So you kind of fast forward to the ALDS that year. Delmon Young has that huge game that, you know, he gets that big hit, and you guys are up 2-0 against the Tigers, and then you're going to Detroit. Kind of what was the feeling of the team around that point? Because I'm sure you felt like not only do we have a chance to sweep here, but we have a chance to, you know, possibly be going to a World Series at this point.
Oh, for sure. Even the pitchers that we faced, you know, playing Detroit, you know, we faced, you know, it was Verlander, Scherzer, and then Price. You know, that's a pretty lethal, you know, that was what, about 6 years ago? I mean, yeah, that's still a lethal pitching staff right now. You know, that was, you know, to do what we did against those guys, you know, just the team that we had, the way that we were able to just always – no matter what the point was in the game, that we could always find ways to win if we were down. There was no question that we were going to go to a World Series that year. We all felt it, and you know, fortunately, we faced an even hotter team in the Kansas City Royals, because no matter what they did, they always found a way to get that key hit or that key run at every crucial time. And you know, they were kind of, you know, they were on the same track that we were. You know, they were hot, but they were just hot. Or we were hot, they were hot, but they just found a way to get done.
I wanted to ask you about this because I saw every one of those ALCS games up close, and it was frustrating as someone who obviously was a lifelong Orioles fan watching it. Yes, it was a four-game sweep. The series, the Orioles had a great bullpen, the Royals had a great bullpen, and you know, leads were just critical in all this. I know by the numbers, you did not have a good series, but I distinctly remember you putting so many balls on the screws that seemed mm-hmm. to go right to Kansas City defenders. And then looking back, and I'm not the most well-versed in advanced metrics, but I did see a number as far as hard-hit balls. The Orioles had a much better average than the Kansas City Royals in that series, and that's just the reality of it. But you in particular stood out to me as someone who may have hit, you know, 4, 5, 6 balls on the screws that went right into the gloves of Kansas City defenders.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was really frustrating too, because you know I felt really good at the plate, and I just kept looking up at the scoreboard. I'm like, man, I'm hitting, I think 1 for 15, 1 for 16, something like that. And I'm like, man, I feel really good at the plate here, and I'm just not getting anything to fall. And yeah, it was definitely frustrating, and you know, it just seems like, you know, we were doing stuff like that, and then they would have a runner on third. First and third, and they just hit a slow rolling ground ball where we couldn't get the double play turned, or they just a 2-out jam shot that just fell over everybody, and we just it just constantly kept happening for those guys, and we couldn't get it done. Not to take anything away from Kansas City, you know, they were a great team, they were a hot team, but playing in that series was definitely a frustrating series, especially for everything that we were accomplishing, and just to have it end that the way that it did was kind of very frustrating.
When you still look at the season as a whole, though, you know, 14 was a career year for you. You got over 100 games, home runs, RBIs, lots of opportunities to play. Was that what the productivity came down to, was an opportunity to be in the lineup pretty much every day? I mean, usually in different spots across the field, but at the same time, was it that everyday opportunity that kind of allowed you to put that season together?
For sure. You know, it's all about just taking advantage of any kind of opportunity. And, you know, when Chris Davis went down, it was, you know, I had my chance to, I don't know if you guys remember, I got released that year from the Orioles. And, you know, I had the opportunities to go to other places, but we didn't have another first baseman on the roster. So that was my decision to come back to play for the Orioles, was the fact that there was everyday playing opportunity for me. And I knew this was, that would have been a chance for me to do that. So definitely playing every single day definitely helps, you know, instead of getting those sporadic at-bats, you know, every now and again, those Sunday morning starts, those late inning at-bats off relievers, you know, it's very tough to play that way.
Steve, I know obviously you had great success with the Red Sox, won a World Series, won a World Series MVP, but just looking back at that 2014 campaign, along the lines of what Jeff said, the chemistry of the ball club, just being a part of something like the Delmon Young double where you came home on to break a long drought of not winning an AL East for an organization that has much pride as the Orioles. Where does this rank for you on a personal level?
Well, it's definitely, you know, it's in my top, you know, memories that I'll ever have. You know, that Delmon Young double, I mean, that was loud. That was one of the best moments of my career was that double that he hit. You know, especially, you know, we were down that game. And then it was just, you know, just another, you know, part of what the Orioles did. We found ways to come back and win. And to do it in that atmosphere was incredible. I mean, it was so loud. I mean, my ears were popping when I was running around third base. You know, it was – you couldn't hear yourself think. I mean, you know, I must have watched the replay of that, you know, 100 times. And you just see the screen just, you know, shaking, just how loud it was. And you just see people from across the street, you know, they're on top of the buildings. And the whole city was electric. I mean, I got chill bumps just thinking about it. I mean, that was – it was such a cool moment. And I'll never forget it. That's one of my highlights that I relive all the time.
For you, you're one of the rare players out there that I think I saw this recently. You were one of only six major league players to play for every team in a division. And as Brett talked about, like the American League East is one of the toughest divisions in all of major league sports. It doesn't matter where you go. Did you find it kind of humorous just how much time that you spent in the AL East and just going from ballpark to ballpark and how it always seemed like you came back to an AL East team?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I always tell everybody was, you know, when I kept going to a new team, I was like, well, I know all these guys. So I really just had to learn when I went to a new team, whether it was the Rays or Toronto or Red Sox, it was like, well, I played against these guys forever. So I really just have to know their personalities now, because I knew how they were as a ball player. It's like, you know, playing first base, you talk to everybody. And so the transition was always easy when I went to every single team. And that's what was it always made it easy for me. You know, just going to a new team, just being like, all right, hey man, what's up? All right, yeah, how's all right, what are you all about? You know, it's just kind of learning new personalities. So it was always really easy, because the transition was always easy.
Not that Orioles fans necessarily care too much about this one, but you did win a World Series MVP, kind of noteworthy. Where is that trophy kept up in the Pierce household?
The trophy. Oh man, that's on my mantle in my man cave. That's back of the house. I would have it out here, but I'm not at my house right now. But that's the award that you want to win. Yeah, that's the award you dream about your whole life. So, you know, I take so much pride in that award.
You also, when you win a World Series MVP, I mean, Chevrolet, I think, gave you a truck. Like, do you drive the truck around at all, or do you do anything with that?
I don't. My dad does. I gave it to him.
Nice.
And he loves it. I love when he drives it. You know, I bought a truck, you know, the year before, And, you know, when I won the World Series and I saw how nice the truck was, I was kind of upset. I was like, man, I just bought myself a truck. If I would have known I was going to win a truck, I would have held out for a year. So, yeah, my dad loved it. And, you know, it was awesome for me to give it to him.
Well, Steve, we appreciate your time talking about those 2014 Orioles, a team that won a division title, just energized all Orioles fans, but really the city. And what a couple of just incredible moments that you're including the day the Orioles won the American League East with a win over the Blue Jays, a game you went deep in. And then again, you hit those two home runs the next day, which is really impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, those hurt more than most of them, I'll tell you that. But it was fun. It was fun season, fun team. It was magical. Yeah, I mean, the Oriole fans, they were so crazy that year. It was awesome showing up to the park. I remember there were rain delays, and you just heard that the place just rocking. And you know, when you hear about home field advantage, you know, Camden Yards was, you know, during 2014 was definitely, we definitely had that home field advantage. I'll tell you that.
Steve, thank you so much. Be healthy and well to you and your family. Thank you. Well, Jeff, that's Steve Pierce, and I love the fact he was wearing his AL East shirt. I think we can become cynical about these ball players in some way, which is unfortunate. But for a guy like Steve Pierce, you could sense it. That team, those moments, they meant so much to him. I mean, we're now talking about 6 years later, and he still has the shirt he was wearing that night, the one he celebrated in, which I thought was just cool. And it says a lot, really, what these moments really mean to them as people.
If you go back into the conversation, you pointed out that he was wearing the shirt, and he was saying that it still kind of smells of champagne. He was like, this was the actual shirt that he received when the Orioles won the division, and they threw him the shirt. And but it was so cool to see that. And I respect Steve Pierce for how he continued to stick with it, and he just took whatever role that he was assigned, wherever they needed him to play, whatever was asked of him, he just went about his business. And did it. It would have been easy for somebody that, you know, had bounced around with the Pirates for so long and had jumped from team to team and the number of transactions. I mean, you even go to the very end and how he was with Toronto and then he goes over to the Red Sox, and it's just like, okay, it's like, well, my wife and family finally gets here. Now we got to move again. But he just accepted whatever assignment that he was given. He made the most of it throughout his career, and he was big for the Orioles. He was big in 2018, where he was World Series MVP. And those are the guys that you root for. It's like the superstars you expect stuff from, and the all-stars you expect them to be good. But when somebody stays around the game for as long as guys like Steve Pierce did, you know, parts of 13 years in the big leagues, they're the ones that you find yourself rooting the most for.
You mentioned that Steve said his shirt still may have smelled like champagne. I do recall the voice of the Orioles at the time, my friend Joe Angel, said in his radio call, which was tremendous, champagne for everybody. And that's actually what he said in his call. So I think Steve and others really took advantage of it. For me, I remember it well. At the time, I was in the Orioles locker room doing post-game interviews on radio, on the Orioles radio network. And it was as celebratory as I've been in some losing locker rooms, and I've been in some winning locker rooms across a variety of sports. The celebration that night in that clubhouse was something else. I even recall a player or two coming over and putting some liquid on my head. But it was something else. And then we had to kind of go back on the radio for hours and hours. And it's one of those days where you really obviously embrace everything that's coming to you, because we've all seen the other side of it. And then, you know, we all had to get up early the next day and do our radio and television hits and do everything that was, you know, in reaction to it. And Baltimore just didn't care. I mean, it was so energized. I mean, they opened up the ballpark that night, and it was 35,000. It felt like 45,000. And it was a Tuesday night, you know, kids at school early next day. We were already middle September, and it was just so loud. I mean, people did not want to leave the ballpark. They did not want to leave. Adam Jones took a lap around the field. Nick Markakis, I just remember this look of shock on his face. I mean, this is a guy drafted and developed by the club, and you just saw him take in the moment. Nick is as stoic as they come. But in this moment, you saw the emotion on his face. It was something you had to see.
I think some of the things that I remember about that night were, of course, the celebration and Joe Angel's call, but the number of pies that, you know, Adam Jones, yeah, you know, pieing Nick Markakis, Adam Jones pieing a fan. I mean, it was the definition of a celebration for a place that had been waiting so long and felt like this group was going to be the group that could finally do it. And after, you know, you'd started to gradually get closer and closer, you eventually got all the different pieces that were there that was able to get a run to the ALCS. And my question to you, Brett, is were those clothes that you had ruined from all that champagne I'm sure you got on you in the clubhouse after the game?
Good question. I actually brought a change of clothes to the ballpark
that night.
In Radio 2 at Camden Yards, which is right next to where one day you'll be calling a lot of Orioles games on the radio, Jeff, next to Radio 1, which is where I had my post-game booth set up. I had a change of clothes. I put on a new shirt. I put on some new clothes. I was drenched. I was completely drenched, and I was prepared for it, which I think was smart. You know, other people were trying to prep me. I'd been around the 2012 club a lot, but they didn't have a home celebration like that, and I covered that team closely, but they didn't have that moment in a clubhouse. But people were saying, you know, put your microphone and your phone in plastic, put it in a Ziploc bag, do all these things. And I tried to do some of that best I could, but it was one of those things where you just kind of had to roll with it. But I did try and prepare. That is the truth. By the way, if people forgot, we mentioned Steve Pearson, a home run that game. A guy by the name of Jimmy Paredes hit a home run off Drew Hutchinson in the second inning. Paredes was one of those, you know, pickups where it kind of just worked again. Alejandro Deyaza tripled, a three-run triple in that game. Nick Markakis led off, got on base a few times, you might expect, also scored a couple runs. Nelson Cruz was your DH. J.J. Hardy was your shortstop. Ryan Flaherty started that game at second. And also catcher Nick Hundley, who's had a very good career. He was a pickup in the season after the Wieters injury. He and Caleb Joseph basically split time behind the plate. So it was really a team in that sentiment. 96 wins. You may never hear this again. I mean, they ran away with the American League East. If it was a horse race, you know, this thing was over at the top of the stretch.
It was. And the way that they just kept getting production and it kept building upon itself. I mean, there was a time where, I mean, early on in the years, they were trying to work some things out. But once you started getting to June and July, I mean, June was a really good month. It was a great month for Steve Pearce if you went back and looked at the numbers and what he was able to put together. And Nelson Cruz had a great June as well and was just putting up absurd numbers, immediately showing the Orioles why they took the chance, brought him on board, and he produced in a major, major way for that team. But once you get into July, like you said, it was they were lapping people. I mean, there was no doubt that this was the Orioles' division. They had firm control of it. They go to the postseason, they sweep the Tigers, and suddenly you run into the Royals. But, you know, as much magic as the Orioles had going for them, the Royals were just in one of those years where it was the same kind of situation, and, you know, everything just came together for them as it was coming together for the O's.
And, Jeff, you'll remember this, you have to remind me of it. Didn't the Royals need a miracle to win their wild card game against Oakland, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes,
they did. They needed a miracle to even advance to that point. I don't want to take anything away from Kansas City because they went on to win the pennant, and then they won the World Series the next year. I mean, they were totally legitimate. They played a very fascinating style of baseball. Their bullpen obviously was perfect for the postseason. But didn't they need a miracle to win that wild card game?
I have to go look back at the box score to see exactly how it happened, but I believe they won it on a walk-off. Don't quote me on this because I don't have it in front of me. I think it might have been Salvador Perez who had a walk-off possibly
right.
In that game. So maybe you can check that for me. But, I mean, they kind of – the Royals' style has always been pitching and defense and just scoring enough runs. If you go all the way, you know, back in time, you know, earlier on, that's kind of the way that the Orioles played, you know, when they kind of had their first wave of strength. But you play in that massive ballpark at Kauffman Stadium, and when you could turn things over to that bullpen where it was like you'd see the guys that were coming in. It was fast, faster, and fastest.
Yeah, no mystery.
If you just got 4 to 5 innings out of your starting pitcher and you could give it over to that group, you had a pretty good sense that you're going to be able to win the game. And then whenever the Orioles, like we talked about, hit something hard, it seemed like they had any momentum, there was the Royals defense to make a big play.
And the reality is, and I don't want to harp on this too much, but you're getting me going here, Jeff. The reality is the Orioles bullpen, I would argue, that year was deeper by having 6-7 guys over the course of 162 you could turn to. But in a playoff format with the built-in off days, it allows you to ride 2, 3, 4 guys every single game. And that's a little different. I mean, listen, the Orioles had some lockdown guys in their bullpen, Britton, O'Day, Miller. I mean, they could have, you know, run out any one of those guys, and it would have been just as dominant. But it was about getting a lead and, you know, a play here, play there. And they just weren't able to come up with that one or two big hits you needed to jump out in front and to make it their bullpen game. And that's the way it breaks. I mean, every one of those games is hyper-competitive, really close, and it was 4 games that went the Kansas City Royals' way. But, Jeff, that was a lot of fun looking back at this magic moment. Steve Pierce is a really – interesting baseball guy, just a character, and really a glue guy on that 2014 Orioles club. So that was a lot of fun.
It was a blast, and I love to hear how he and Tommy Hunter continue to share that baseball
cool.
from the final out. Like, Hunter was on the mound for it, hit it to Steve Pierce at first base, steps on first base, because sometimes you never know what happens to the ball. Like, do you keep it? Does it get lost in a dog pile? Do you throw it into the stands and a fan gets it? Like what ultimately happens to the baseball? That's like one of the funnier things that can happen out there. But Pierce still has got it, and he kind of trades it off with Tommy Hunter.
Should it be on display somewhere in the warehouse right now or wherever? Yeah, you would think that's where that ball would be. But good for Steve and Tommy to corral that thing. But that does it for this episode of Magic Moments. We can't wait to talk to you again soon.